All right, we want to welcome everybody into the first ever edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. Evan Lazar, Adam Kirkjian, we're going to be coming at you all football season long, talking mostly Patriots football, but probably some NFL topics too. So yeah. Just want to thank everybody for listening in on the first show. And on this week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit of training camp buzz since Adam was present for a few days, and then we're also going to talk about which veterans are on the hot seat that we see this season in training camp. Adam, you got anything to add?
Yeah, just wanted to, make sure we got to mention for this that we're both Boston Herald.
Both Boston Herald people, true.
So if you want to see me and Evan's work over the course of the season and draft and all that stuff, you pick up a Herald and read and contribute to our site and paper and all that. So we'll be, blogging, writing articles and tweeting about it. So definitely pick up Heralds. So it's going to be fun. And I'm sure we'll do some draft stuff too when that comes around in free agency and all that. So as we'll be doing a lot during football season, but I'm pretty sure it'll be almost a year-round thing. It's exciting that, the season's just starting. I was at training camp practice yesterday, and you could sort of feel the excitement because of all the fans were there, and I think there was like 15,000 fans there. I think that's what Mike Reese tweeted out, and it felt like that, and it was, cheers for every big play and stuff like that, so... there's definitely a ton of interest in the Pats right now, and that's sort of undeniable.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Mike Reese tweeted out something about there being fans standing on the ramps that go up into the bleachers, which I have gone up way too many times, and that is just crazy. I mean, you think about it, it's like almost like these training camp practices are starting to get like, spring football in college, D1, right. Big schools or something like that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's exactly, I've thought of it that way before. Some of these big schools and colleges, like, the people come to these free spring practices just or these spring games, they get these huge turnouts, and that's the kind of passion you're seeing from Pats fans right now, because they know the team's going to be good, and they want to see these little, these little battles for spots. But I guess one of the things where that sort of transitions into what we're going to be talking about today is, there's going to be battles for spots, and there are guys who've been on the team, or just veterans in general, who might be pushed off the roster depending on, who comes out and really performs well over this next month.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I know Adam has been there, obviously, but if you haven't been to Patriots training camp, it's free, and it's honestly well worth the trip to Foxborough. It's a great time. It's about as close to the players as you're ever going to get. You're never going to sit that close in a game. And the players sign autographs after the fact. So if you have kids or whatever, even your own self, if you want an autograph, go wait around after the practice. And I used to do it when I still lived in the area, and it was great. Training camp practice is awesome. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely go out to training camp practice and see what it's all about. Adam, one other thing before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show. Rob Ninkovich, a no-show for day one. I believe Greg A. Bedard cited personal reasons. What are you hearing? What do you think about Ninkovich not showing? 33 years old, contract year, maybe some rumblings about him retiring, not making the cut. What do you think?
I would think that's a little premature to say some of those things. I do feel like I believe him when he says he's still – wants to play, and he said that recently. He could be somebody that could be, one of those surprise cuts, because you never know with any of these guys. I mean, we're going to talk about it soon, but there's always somebody on the team that you just don't expect to be cut that gets cut. But I still feel like Rob is a productive guy, even though it wasn't quite as much there last year. I think he's physically one of the strongest guys on the team. But this is, he is sort of on the back nine of his career. And, you know, so I wouldn't read too much into it. I do sort of feel like if it, you know, the announced personal reasons, I feel like, you know, I'll take that at face value. But sure, I mean, anything can be possible with that. But I don't feel like he's on his way out just yet.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised to see people talking about him not making the cut or retirement or whatever. It may be this early on in training camp before we, you know, I've even seen him take the field or anything like that. Obviously, last year a little bit of a down year for Ninkovich's standards, but I think his presence and his you know, wherewithal in the locker room and stuff like that, and on the field too, as kind of a second brain out there as a coach almost, is huge. I can't fathom that he's done quite yet, but he does have two Super Bowl rings. You know, probably made a pretty good amount of money playing in the NFL at this point. So you do understand how at 33 years old some of those rumors might come up, but I agree. I fully expect to see Rob Ninkovich on this team come week one. I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
Yeah.
But,
go ahead. I feel like the last time we talked to him and he was talking about, you know, the upcoming season, we were broaching that subject, the reporters and him, and he was saying, you know, as long as I can – you know, keep playing, I'm going to do it, and I'll know that time. And it didn't seem like that time was now yet. So, you know, so if we're talking about from his end, I don't see him just hanging it up. That would be a shot for me.
Yeah, I agree as well. All right, so for today's show, where our main topic of conversation is going to be some veteran players who we believe are on the hot seat going into this training camp. And we'll start with a big name and kind of work our way through it here. But the first name that everybody kind of talked about this offseason, Adam, is a possibility, is Deion Lewis. And the big stat is always the Patriots are undefeated when Deion Lewis plays in the football game. But I mean, I think we both know that he doesn't play often enough to be a roster lock at this point, I would say.
Yeah, the one thing I would say to that, though, is I feel like they have good depth at the position, and that could, you know, make that conversation, you know, a valid one. But I do still kind of feel like talent-wise, he still might be the most, you know, talented guy in that unit. He's so versatile in terms of, you know, being able to be solid with running the ball between the tackles outside and, you know, and catching the ball out of the backfield. There's a lot of guys on that unit who are, you know, pretty good runners, but not great receivers, and pretty good receivers who aren't great runners. I kind of feel like Lewis is a nice blend of both, especially that first season he was with the team. He really showed it off. I mean, I think the main concern is durability, and, you know, that's a valid point, especially when you consider the other guys on the team. There's some depth, and you could, you know, technically be fine without Deion Lewis. I just think his upside is so good that if you can get anything close to what you had from him a couple of years ago, then you don't want to let that go.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago he was on pace to shatter the running back record for receiving yards in a season, franchise record. And, you know, he was just such a dynamic player. And I don't know if we ever saw him get fully back there last year, but maybe another year removed from the ACL and we might see it. What it is, and it doesn't really matter. We're splitting hairs here because they're probably going to make the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl anyways. But here's the thing, you know, when they have James White on the field, they're predictable. They are a passing team for the most part when James White is on the field. Obviously, in Super Bowl 51, they needed to pass as much as possible that in the third and fourth quarter in overtime. So it didn't really matter that they were predictable. Right. He also delivered a few runs that we've never seen James White ever deliver in his life in that game. You know, with Mike Gillisley, they're predictable again. It was the same thing as if when they put LeGarrette Blount on the field last year, teams knew that they were running the football, or they knew that they really didn't have to worry about Blount out of the backfield. I think Gillisley will add a little bit more than Blount did in terms of receiving, but he's still not known to be a pass-catching running back, so to speak. Deion Lewis is the type of guy that you don't know what you're going to get when he's on the field. And that is what makes him so hard to predict and so hard to game plan for as the Patriots offense evolves here. They are just so much more dynamic as a unit on offense when they have Deion Lewis healthy and on the field, because he can run the ball between the tackles, as you said, or he could catch the ball out of the backfield. He can line up in the slot. He can line up outside as a wide receiver. They don't have another guy that can do all of those things. Now, Rex Burkhead maybe can, but I don't think Rex Burkhead is quite the athlete that Deion Lewis is. He's not the guy in space that Deion Lewis is. Exactly. But he's the type of player that is kind of a Swiss Army knife too, but I would expect to see him more in a role of the next guy we're going to talk about here is Brandon Bolden, instead of a guy like Deion Lewis who's a scat back. I love to see Deion Lewis on the team. They can cut him for $200,000 of dead money, which is pretty much nothing in football terms. Yeah. So if they need to cut him, they could cut him. Maybe he had some trade value. If he has a decent preseason and they decide to cut him before the 53, maybe they could, you know, get a late round draft pick for him instead. Mainly the thing is with him, and you touched on it too, he's played 14 games in the last 2 years during the regular season. It's just not enough. It's not enough. The durability is not there. But obviously the skill and what he brings to the Patriots in terms of flexibility on offense is off the charts.
Yeah, and it's like what you're talking about. It's like, you know, all right, so he's not the most – he's not necessarily a guy you expect to play 16 games. And these other guys have some good skills to bring to the table, but – when you talk about upside, when you talk about, you know, the most talent, you know, somebody who can do all these things and really help McDaniels, Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, open up the playbook on any down, that's really so valuable. So you can sort of see it from both sides, but if I'm making the decisions, and I know I'm not, but if I'm making this,
you are on this show.
yeah, exactly. I'm keeping Deion Lewis. I like him.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how he even discusses a guy that in the divisional round last year had 3 touchdowns, including a kick return touchdown, and was the most dynamic player on the field. And in that game, quite honestly, if they don't have Deion Lewis, they might not win that game.
Right.
And now here we are sitting here talking about how he might not, you know, even make the roster. That also speaks to how deep the running back position is right now. But let's move on to another running back and Brandon Bolden, who I love as a longtime Patriots guy. But let's be honest. I mean, he played 13 total snaps on offense last year. That's it. Obviously, he's a big special teams guy, but Brandon Bolden's going to have a tough time making this roster, I think.
Yeah, I feel and I'm kind of with you in the same boat. He's one of my favorite guys to talk to in the locker room, because you always get an honest quote from him. And I don't get a chance to write about him a lot, because – you know, we don't do like a ton of articles about just special teams guys. I mean, he's mostly just that. He's a core special teamer. I do feel like, you know, it might be a cliche, but, you know, he's one of these guys that carries a lot of respect in the locker room. And when he, you know, when new guys come to the team and they have to learn the culture of how important special teams are to this program, he's one of the guys that really is critical in teaching these guys to take a lot of pride in that. And he's got a lot of respect. I know him and Nate Ebner are very close. So it's one of those deals, though, where, you know, if somebody like Rex Burkhead is, you know, going to be taking over, like, special teams calls and stuff like that, it's somebody – Brandon is somebody who could be pushed off the roster. So, you know, it really is one of those things. They have all these running backs who contribute on offense. And at some point, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from, you're not really going to get a ton from Brandon on offense. So it makes him, I think a lot of roster projections have him not making the team. And if I did one right now, I'd probably be sort of in the same boat. But it's too bad because he is really valuable in the locker room. He is really valuable on special teams. You know, when I need to get a quote from the story and he's willing to talk, then he gives me good stuff. So, and I just think he's a good guy. So, it would be too bad to see him cut, but I think it's a very real possibility.
Yeah, I mean, Rex Burkhead would seemingly take over some of the responsibilities on special teams. Bolden is as valuable as a special teams guy as the Patriots have on this team. I believe he played on 3 or 4 different special teams units last year. He's 5th on the team in special team snaps overall. You know, a big-time contributor on special teams. And like you said, just kind of a Patriot way type guy. You know, he just comes in and he does his work. He's accountable, all those types of things. It just – in a loaded backfield, when you really get down to the numbers game – of it, you know, Gillisley is obviously going to be on this roster. Burkhead's obviously going to be there. James White's obviously going to be there. Then you have Deion Lewis. You have Brandon Bolden. Obviously, you need the spot for James Devlin somewhere on there. You know, you're adding up a lot of guys, and you're not going to carry all of those running backs. You know, you're probably going to carry 4. Maybe if Brandon Bolden, you know, works his way onto the roster, they carry a 5th. But it's.
But then you're knocking somebody else off.
Right. And then you're losing a lineman or a defensive back, and those positions are probably more valuable to have the depth at, especially when you expect Gillisley and Burkhead and James White to really be the guys, you know, in the backfield for the most part. All right, let's move on to another guy that's been around a few years here in Cam Fleming, who last year was actually a pretty solid backup, I thought, at the tackle position. But obviously the Patriots went out and drafted 2 offensive tackles, and here is Cam Fleming sitting there as the odd man out potentially. Do you think that he is on this roster or not, Adam?
I think at this point he is. I don't, you know, we haven't seen guys in pads yet. I mean, I'm not there today, so. I haven't seen any of these guys actually block and tackle, or, you know, block, you know, defensive ends and stuff and dodge and all that. So it's hard to say. I think they keep 2 backup tackles. Okay. And so I think definitely Garcia, makes the team. And so that would be Cannon, Solder, Garcia, and 1 other guy.
Right.
So then I'd say that last spot is between Fleming, Waddle, and McDermott. And I think Fleming's ahead of Waddle, and it just depends to me on how much they like McDermott compared to Fleming. So for me, it's hard to say right now because I haven't seen these guys go up against each other, go up against a live rush, which is, you know, what we're going to see. So I think that will be decided. It depends to me just how good McDermott is and if he can really show out. Now, Fleming's obviously got the experience ahead of him, and that's a big thing, and they can maybe put somebody like McDermott on the practice squad. So right now I have Fleming making the team because I think they like him. But I wouldn't be shocked if McDermott, I mean, they don't draft guys, you know, especially offensive linemen, without having a good plan in mind for them. So Skarnecki really, you know, has a good idea of what he's getting when he drafts an offensive lineman. So I feel like it could go kind of 50-50, but at this point, I still got Fleming making.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is definitely something to be said for Fleming's experience and value as a backup tackle, both as a swing tackle and as a guy that can probably handle playing on the left side if they absolutely need him to. I don't like the idea at all of putting a rookie on Tom Brady's blind side when he's 40 years old. It just isn't something that I am crazy about. I'm not even crazy about putting either one of those guys there next year if Nate Solder ends up walking at the end of this year. Maybe Garcia is ready to do it in pass protection, but he's got some serious questions in run blocking. And McDermott just has some serious questions all over the place. But the real question really is can they sneak McDermott onto the practice squad, and are they willing to risk losing a sixth-round pick in a draft class where they only picked four guys,
to a
poacher that comes in and grabs McDermott, through roster cuts. I don't know if they can do it, especially when you factor in the fact that Nate Solder is a free agent at the end of this year. It's just risky to go ahead and a guy that really they targeted in McDermott to go get. Obviously, with the picks that they had, they didn't have a ton of picks, and they targeted him really to go up in the draft there and get him in the sixth round. And I would just worry that he wouldn't make it, to the practice squad and through the waiver, process and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas with Cam Fleming, obviously he probably will get picked up by another team also if he gets cut, but we kind of have seen what he is, we kind of know who Cam Fleming is. He's a serviceable backup in the NFL. He is not ever going to probably be a starting tackle, at least on this team. Maybe he could go elsewhere that doesn't have two, Pro Bowl caliber tackles on the roster already. But I think that, and this is something that I have argued with Patriots fans with before, I think that Nate Solder is extremely underrated in Foxborough.
I don't know how you can sort of take that other side on that right now.
Yeah.
It's not like he never gives up a sack, but he's super solid.
Very solid player. He struggled a little bit, as did every offensive lineman in the Super Bowl. And I think Patriots fans in general and football fans in general tend to put too much stock in one game, right? You have 18-19 games if you're a Patriots fan to evaluate. And we're going to get strung up on what a guy did in one game or in one quarter of one game or in one rep of one game, potentially, in some cases.
Yeah.
So it's Nate Solder is, in my opinion, a top-tier offensive tackle, especially, left tackle. I wouldn't say he's top five. I mean, he's not Tyron Smith, but he's, he's a Pro Bowler. I think that his value on this team is high. And if he gets hurt, and your only backup tackles are two rookies, then it gets donkey. I just don't know if I love the idea of that happening. Obviously, you could get creative. You could move Marcus Cannon to the left side if you really wanted to. But in this day and age in the NFL, it doesn't really matter as much if you play left or right, tackle, because you got pass rushers coming from everywhere. So I think that having Cam Fleming on this team might be ultra valuable in a situation where either Cannon or Solder go down with an injury at any point. When Solder missed week one last year, it was Fleming who stepped in and played pretty well in that game against Arizona. So I think that there's a lot of value to having Cam Fleming on this roster. It's just a matter of numbers again and seeing if they can get McDermott onto the practice squad, because obviously Garcia is making this team. He's a guy that is NFL ready in terms of pass protection probably right away. He just needs to kind of add a little bit more bulk and a little bit more strength to his core. And once he does that, he's going to be fine. So I think that
from an athletic perspective and agility and footwork, Garcia is what you want.
Yeah, no, Garcia is the perfect mirroring left tackle. He can go out there and mirror an edge rusher tomorrow, and I would be pretty confident that he could do it as long as he doesn't get bull rushed. His kick step out of his stance is really, really, really good.
I think if during the draft, when you're looking at guys and you have that, I think that NFLbreakdown.com, they do those YouTube videos where it's just every snap of the player.
Yeah.
And you watch that Clemson game, and that defensive line was the best in the country and probably will be again this year or close to it. And he was, I mean, he was handling himself.
Yeah.
Like really well. Like, I mean, he had no problems in that game. And he was even showing off, like, you know, pushing guys back on certain run plays. So I'm confident in his abilities to eventually, you know, maybe not right away or, you know, in the next year or so, take over at left tackle. I think he's going to be a very, very good player.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy when you think about it. The Patriots have really had two left tackles this entire Belichick-Brady run. They went from Matt Light literally right to Nate Solder, and we all kind of got spoiled. You don't even think about it really like that, but Matt Light's a guy who I think could potentially be, you know, Hall of Fame bound if he gets the votes. Probably won't, but he was a guy that, you know, was very, very key to every single Super Bowl run that he was in. And then they drafted Solder in the first round the year before Matt Light retired, and then they put Solder in right away at left tackle in his second season, and the you know, the ship went on, as they say. So you know, I think Antonio Garcia is going to be a really good football player too. I loved everything that I saw out of him on tape. Mainly the two things are: one, he needs to bulk up and add some size and strength, and the second thing is that he is coming from an air raid system. It's not that big of a deal, but essentially in the air raid, the left tackles and the tackles on both sides really are a little bit more further out than they will be in a traditional system. So it makes it a little bit easier for them to get guys coming off the edge. But in general, I think that, you know, he's going to be a really good player. And when you watch the tape on him mirroring pass rushers, you can go watch him in that Clemson game as a perfect example against guys that are NFL caliber. You know, ends rushing the passer, and he's just smothering them. And it was impressive to watch. But Cam Fleming, again, I think we both want him on this team. It's just going to be a matter of numbers and if they can get McDermott, you know, to the practice squad or not. But let's move on here to another guy who just hasn't seen the field. We just haven't seen Jordan Richards play any football.
Right.
We know everything about Jordan Richards. You know, we know that he's a Belichick guy. We know that he's ultra smart. He can, you know, play all 11 positions on the field on defense or something like that because he knows the playbook that well. But he literally doesn't play. So,
and he's another guy that when you go into the locker room, very engaging, super friendly, and you don't want a guy to, you know, get like that to get cut. But, you know, I mean, he hasn't. He's in a way, in the same way you reference Fleming as far as somebody who you don't see as a starter down the line. I don't see, you know, when one of these safeties either retires or leaves, I don't see Jordan Richards as a starter for the Patriots. So I see him eventually, you know, on some roster projections, you see him on there and some you don't. I'm not confident that he makes the team. Haven't seen a ton of these guys who are sort of newcomers really separate themselves in these OTAs and this and the very little we've seen out of training camp. But a guy like, say, like Kenny Moore, you know, we can see, you know, flashes. So, you know, I think he can be replaced, and I honestly, out of most of the guys we're going to be talking about today, he's one of the main guys I can just see him getting cut.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. The main thing, looking at the kind of the future of the safety position here, you know, Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon are here to stay for the next couple of years at least. In McCourty's case, I think he can play for as long as he's able to play, you know, as a Patriot, you know, team captain type guy. Daron Harmon obviously just signed a new contract. Really, the spot that they're looking for a replacement for is Patrick Chung. And yeah, and I just
tough, and that's a tough replacement because
yeah, I mean, he's great, yeah. And I just don't think that Jordan Richards is even that type of player that can play that nickel corner, you know, in the box safety type role, almost as a third linebacker.
Yeah, in fact, it's almost, I mean, it's almost impossible to find a guy who can, I mean, like, you're seeing more and more of those hybrid types, but it's really hard to find one like Chung who can play that role, cover tight ends, be one of the best tacklers on the team, stick with running backs, slot receivers. I mean, he can do so much.
And he's really developed into quite the player after the Patriots parted ways with him originally.
Yeah, and he's talked about how he's been used differently now. I mean, they use him now to take advantage of his best skills. And especially with all the move tight ends you see in offenses these days, and the way sometimes where, you know, we look at these Patriots linebackers, and these guys aren't, you know, the speedy, you know, Deion Jones, you know, Levante David types on the Patriots roster. So when you have a guy like Chung who can come up into the box and cover guys man-to-man that normally a linebacker would, super valuable. That gives you so much scheme flexibility, and it allows to do a lot more than it would if you didn't have a guy like Chung. So yeah, I guess we're sort of veering off the Richards thing a little bit. But, I mean, replacing Chung is going to be an important task for them eventually if they can't, you know, win that time.
Yeah, you know, whenever someone asks me, like, what separates Bill Belichick from, as a game plan perspective, from other coaches, I always tell them to go look at Patrick Chung's just
right.
Over the course of the years, what Patrick Chung has become. Early on in his career, they had him playing deep safety, and it was not good. He could not, you know, he didn't really have enough sideline to sideline speed to play center field or play in cover two even. Then they decided with the second time around to turn him into this hybrid nickel corner in the box safety type where everything basically is in front of him.
Right.
And it just changed everything. He went from being, you know, a guy that they got rid of to a borderline Pro Bowl safety, I would say. And he just wears so many different hats. And like you said, and he basically played a lot of nickel corner last year. I mean, he was basically their slot corner for a lot of the season last year when they were struggling to find a consistent guy to play in the slot. They basically just put Patrick Chung in the slot, whether it was against a tight end or a slot wide receiver or a running back or whoever. It was Patrick Chung. I love Patrick Chung. I think he is extremely valuable to this team. And Jordan Richards, I mean, we are totally veering off, but Jordan Richards is not that guy, I just don't think. I mean, maybe he is, and he's just secretly been that this entire time, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
And basically, if he hasn't, you know, shown enough on the practice field in these couple of years to get more playing time, to demand more playing time, then I think that we're kind of seeing the end of Jordan Richards here. And I don't think they're really going to miss him too much.
Right. I do think his best chance of being on this roster is his knowledge of an experience of the system. And if he wants to be in a Patrick Chung type role, you got to take on a lot of different roles in terms of skills, and you got to know them back and forth. And he's a smart guy, obviously went to Stanford, and you can just tell by talking to him. And he's a high football IQ guy. And if they think he can handle it that way and go, I mean, that's his best shot of making the team. But I feel like he's got physical limitations, and I think, you know, I don't think he makes it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, let's move on to another guy who in 2015 was a huge part of the team. 2016 is his role completely diminished. Justin Coleman, a slot cornerback, essentially, really had a rough first month of the season last year that kind of buried him. I looked up his stats for that Miami game in week two, and it was absolute disaster. He gave up three catches, for one of them going for a touchdown. He missed two tackles in that game. His passer rating into his coverage was 150.
Yeah.
So just absolutely a disastrous game, and it kind of just never really got back to the 2015 Justin Coleman from there.
Yeah, I feel like this all comes down to him versus Cyrus Jones, because I feel like Jonathan Jones is on the team. You know, he's so valuable on special teams. He's looked so much better in coverage in the spring and in general in coverage from last year, that, you know, and he's shown a lot of, like, you know, you look at Jonathan Jones and he's getting a ton of looks right now. So he's on the team, and obviously Rowe, Butler, Gilmore, they're on the team. So that's four guys, and there's probably one more spot. And so
it's probably Cy Jones's, if we're being honest.
Yeah, and it is, because, you know, you don't want to give up on a guy who they drafted that high in a second year. I do feel, though, that, like, Justin Coleman, from what I've seen, is a better coverage guy than Cyrus Jones. And Cyrus Jones really has had that so much trouble in the return game and his confidence issues. You know, if you know, obviously Coleman has struggled at times. When I watch these guys practice and I see Coleman making plays, and I see Jones getting beat time and again and dropping kickoffs, it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, Justin Coleman brings more to the table, in my opinion. But it's good. But I just don't think they're going to give up on Cyrus at this point.
Yeah.
But I feel like Cyrus is going to make the team, and those five that we talked about, it's going to be it, and Coleman's going to be out.
Yeah, I mean, when you we can get into Cyrus Jones at another time, but I would just take him off the kick returns at this point, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have any hope of saving that guy's career in New England, at least, get him off of the kick returns and punt returns, because he's just – it's obviously in his head at this point, and it's affecting his entire game, not just that aspect of his game. You know, he just feels like he doesn't belong at all anywhere on the NFL field right now. As far as Justin Coleman goes, I feel like they gave up on him pretty quickly last year, because – they decided, once they got Eric Rowe in the building, they really decided that they were going to have Rowe, Logan Ryan, and Malcolm Butler as their top three corners. And then anything beyond that, they went with safeties, right? You know, they went with the Chung Harmon, McCourty package, instead of a fourth cornerback. I would expect to see more of the same now with Stephon Gilmore in for Logan Ryan, essentially. On the outside of the Logan did play a little bit of slot corner as well, more so in 2016 than he did in the past.
But
I really actually, you know, I've been saying this for a while, but Malcolm Butler is the guy that I kind of see emulating Chris Harris's role in the Broncos secondary, where he plays a little bit more inside this year, especially with Gilmore and Eric Rowe as two really good boundary corners that are big, athletic, tall,
long,
guys. And Butler is a, you know, scrappy, small, fast, you know, all of the things that we love about Malcolm Butler.
Excellent tackler.
I wouldn't be surprised if they play him more in the slot. That's not diminishing his value whatsoever. I mean, Chris Harris is one of the best, you know, top five cornerbacks in the league, and he plays a lot of snaps in the slot for Denver. So I just kind of see that Eric Rowe and Stephon Gilmore are going to be the two outside guys. Malcolm Butler obviously will be an outside guy too at times, and then maybe even drop down a little bit in the slot. And where does that leave Justin Coleman? And maybe could they possibly, you know, save that roster spot for another place on the roster where there's so much going on this roster, so much talent. Maybe they end up carrying another wide receiver, or maybe they end up carrying another lineman or somewhere where they really only need to have, you know, 4-5 quarterbacks at the most when you really factor in the fact that Patrick Chung is basically a cover guy. Devin McCourty and De'Ron Harmon can obviously handle the deeper safety responsibilities, and even McCourty can be a cover guy also. Do they really need that many cornerbacks? You know, they obviously the top three of Gilmore, Butler, and Rowe are locked in. Jonathan Jones, I agree with you, is on this roster. So that's four right there. Do they need a fifth guy? I mean, I don't even know if they do. And is it worth it, whereas they could, you know, keep guys in other spots where they have such a deep roster going into camp? Justin Coleman is a guy that I think is going to have a really tough time making the roster, even though I think that he was better than what he put on tape last year.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I agree with you.
So moving on now to a guy that I just can't figure out either, Shea McClellan.
Yeah. Who, this, like, all the linebackers in general for me are, it's like a, that's the one I look at and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
This is tough. Like, the line, projecting the linebackers to me is really tough.
The linebacker position in general is scary to me. I don't think that it's necessarily a big deal, especially if they play a lot of big dime and they go with a 4-2 front and it's basically Dante Hightower and one other guy on the field, whether it's Kyle Van Noy or David Harris or Landon Roberts or whoever it is. But I like David Harris as a pickup, but I mean, he's a veteran guy. We could see in training camp, we could see 2 weeks from now that David Harris got nothing left in the tank. You know, it's not, I'm not saying that I think that, I'm just saying that it's possible. You see it all the time with these veteran signings that the Patriots make, that they get them into camp and all of a sudden it's not quite the same as what they thought that they were getting. Shea McClellan, I really think the biggest issue with this guy is, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, what is he? Is he an edge? Is he a linebacker? He's not a Sam, because I don't think that he's big enough to be a Sam.
No, I see, here's the thing with Shea is I think he's good at handling a lot of responsibilities. I just don't see him excelling in any of them. You know, I don't see his one shining characteristic where you put him in one spot and you're like, wow, he's excellent. You know, like Dante is obviously one of the best in the league. Landon Roberts, okay, so he's not excellent in coverage, but in like defending the run, he's great. Like you can really see a ton of potential there. Kyle Van Noy, he's got like this good size, so when you drop him in the zone, sometimes he can just swat the ball down with his length. David Harris, obviously a proven guy, like you said, he could fall off this year, but I mean, I think he brings more to the table than Shea. So it's tough, and obviously, and here's the other thing: you get Harvey Landry coming in, and they pay him so much as an undrafted free agent, like. I feel like he's gonna make the team.
Yeah, I love how we got Harvey Lange in on this show. That's great. Yeah,
well, see, that's the thing is, like, you know, why would they pay him that much? And like, it's obvious that they like the guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I feel like he'll make the team. So, you know, when you pick up Harris and you get Lange in there, that creates a lot more, that creates a lot more competition. And I look at McClellan and I think, you know, as far as his versatility, he can do a lot of different things. He plays on special teams. They can put him on the edge and sometimes they have him in the middle, but in terms of what his best thing is, you know, and you know, his ceiling on certain things, it's just not as high as some of the other guys on the team.
Yeah. You know, early on in his career in Chicago, he played edge primarily, and he was okay. I mean, he generated some pressure. He was a decent pressure guy. I didn't really ever have the sacks, but the advanced stats looked good. And then last year, the Patriots played him a lot on the edge, but he just didn't do anything. You know, the numbers weren't there, and it really wasn't on the tape either. And then especially in coverage, he was an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
He allowed 15 completions on 17 targets in coverage last year.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good completion percentage for the quarterback targeting Shea McClellan.
Yeah, and just the eye test with the, he's just not like, you don't look at him and see like great run jump athlete. You don't see that sort of,
which is strange because he tested really well at the combine and he was coming out of college, this, you know, quote unquote athlete type, you know, edge player that they kind of thought was going to be a really good pass rusher. You know, in hindsight, it's a good thing that the Patriots ended up taking Chandler Jones instead of Shay McClellan, but you know, it is what it is. But honestly, I mean, it's tough to find a spot on this team for him because I just don't know what he is. He's too small and gets pushed around too easily to be the Sam.
Yeah.
He's not really rangy enough to be the Will. And then he doesn't really generate much pressure.
And he's not going to be in the middle for you. Like, that's the limit.
Where is he playing?
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like in general with this group, it was just glaring to me that Falcons game, and I've mentioned this a lot before, but, you know, it's glaring to me in this Falcons game. If you can isolate these linebackers in coverage and you don't have to worry about Chung covering one of these running backs or something like that, you can really, really exploit that, especially if they're in man. You know, Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman,
it was a disaster.
Yeah, it's the speed level, like, and you see a lot of these types of linebackers coming into the league more where they're smaller, but they're fast. Like you said, like, well, you see it a lot in the NFC South now with the Tampa Bay linebackers and even with Atlanta's, even though they eventually wore down. Those guys were speed guys. You know, they were smaller, but they're speed guys. And you don't typically see those guys being drafted by Belichick. That's not really his.
He likes the high tower types,
right? But in today's game, you might need more of the like the Deion Jones, the Quan Alexander, the Wante Davids, the guys like that. Those guys are smaller, but they can really run. You know, and you put them against another running back, sometimes they can stay with them. Obviously, James White by the end of the game was running circles around them. But compared to what the Patriots had is just, and I've said this before, I don't know why Atlanta went away from it towards the end of that game because it was there all game.
Yeah, no, Devontae Freeman's one of my favorite running backs to watch in the league. I think that he's widely underrated. But just in general, watching the Patriots linebackers trying to cover Freeman out of the backfield and then in open space when he had the ball was just – scary. It was scary. I mean, it was like anytime Freeman touched the ball in that game, it could have gone for an 80-yard touchdown, and I like wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah.
And when that's happening, you know, it's just not good. I agree with you. Dante Hightower, who, as amazing as he is in today's NFL, an edge defensive end, defensive lineman. I mean, he's 270 pounds.
Right.
You know, the Atlanta linebackers are 235, 240.
Right.
That was part of the reason I think that teams that recruited Hightower as a free agent didn't end up giving him the money that he was looking for because they didn't really know how to use him in today's NFL to the best of his abilities.
Yeah.
Quite, you know, not to give too much credit to the Patriots coaching staff, but the Patriots coaching staff has obviously figured out you know, Hightower's role pretty well in this defense. You can't have a 270-pound guy like Hightower, as good as he is, you know, covering a guy like Freeman in the middle of the field. But then the Patriots don't really have anybody that's that good at it outside of Hightower. You know, it's scary. I think the linebacker group is the only group on this entire team that is – a little subpar. It's the only group really, and you know, obviously it's a lot of credit to the team building aspect of this that's the only group that we can come up with that has real issues. I think that it's a little scary on paper to see that, you know, your main stand-up linebackers here this year, either, you know, veteran David Harris, who's, you know, in his 30s, or Kyle Van Noy. Maybe Alondon Roberts if, you know, he takes a leap in year two.
Yeah.
But, you know, Hightower, I just look at it as a he's kind of in his own world. You know, he's you don't really need to put a position on Dante Hightower. He's kind of just going to be disruptor, you know. He's going to kind of just go anywhere that they need him to go. All right. The last guy we have on here, it pains me to have this name on this list, but we got to talk about it, and that's Danny Amendola, who is as reliable of a player as the Patriots have had over these last couple of years. Obviously, he's had some health issues, but it really isn't as bad as you would expect when you look it up, how many games he's missed over the last couple of years. Just an ultra reliable dude, both as a receiver and as a punt returner. I can't see him getting cut, but with the competition at wide receiver, Adam, you never know.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Another reason why you don't want to see him get cut is this is a guy that's taking team-friendly deals. He's done everything he can in terms of accepting a smaller role, but, like, you know, it's almost like a closer. You know, he doesn't, you know, or, you know, some sort of, like, relief pitcher in baseball, like, who's got a specific role but does it very well. You know, he'll come in on third down or in the red zone and just produce. And he doesn't get a lot of shots, but when he does, he's there, you know, and he does produce. So I think that's a hard thing to do for any player in any sport when you don't get as many snaps or reps or whatever. And it speaks to his humility and his ability to be a team player. And I still think he's good. I still think he's really, like, I mean, you can't watch that Super Bowl and say, like, he's lost it.
Right.
The real issue to me is the only guy right now I can see him being pushed off the roster by is Austin Carr, because I didn't see a ton of him in college. I watched a little bit more after they drafted him, like on film online, and then, you know, in these practices and stuff. And I know Belichick has gone went on a little bit of a rant today about, you know, can't take anything away from it until these guys are in pads and all that. But Carr looks good. Like, you know, Austin Carr looks very good.
He's my guy.
He's got some size to him. He's got good hands. He's one of these guys. Obviously, he's a Northwestern guy, so he's a smart dude. So if somebody knocks Edelman off the roster, like I said, like you said, I don't see it happening per se. But there is a percentage of it, you know, that's possible. And if it happens, I don't think if they put Austin Carr on the practice squad, especially, I expect him to have a good exhibition season. He's not somebody you're going to be able to hide, I don't think. Like that. But I honestly think that Amendola makes the team, but if he doesn't, it's Austin Carr.
Yeah, Austin Carr, I'm the president of the Austin Carr fan club. I put my stake in that one a long time ago after they signed him as a UDFA. I love the kid. I mean, he's great. He absolutely translates directly into the slot receiver role for the Patriots if they want him there. And I totally agree that he is not a guy. It's going to be hard to get Austin Carr onto the practice squad, mainly because I think that he's going to see – a lot of reps against some backups in the preseason with either Jimmy Garoppolo or Jacoby Brissett. And both those guys are pretty good quarterbacks, and they're going to be looking a lot for Austin Carr because he's going to be open. And I can just see it now that Austin Carr in preseason game number 2 is going to have 100 yards receiving on a bunch of passes from Jacoby Brissett. You know, it's already happening. It's going to be difficult, but with Amendola, like you said, you got to look to the Super Bowl, and there's two things that really stood out to me from the Super Bowl that are really telling. The first thing is on that 4th and 10, that was basically 4th in the game. It was, you know, right at the start of the comeback. They needed a first down, and they threw the ball at Danny Amendola.
Right.
It was the season. Was literally on the line, And they didn't just throw the ball to Danny Amendola. They designed a play for Danny Amendola to get open. And he got open, and he caught the ball, and they picked up the first down, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
The other play, the two-point conversion, which, again, was for the season. He got it by that much, but it wasn't Julian Edelman that was catching that screen pass. It was Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
I think his reliability and mainly his hands are a huge part of it. When you have fourth down in the season like that, you don't want to throw the ball to a guy that's going to potentially drop it, right? You know, you want a guy that you know is 100% going to make that catch. And Danny Amendola is that guy. In the fourth quarter and overtime of that Super Bowl, he had four catches, 48 yards, a touchdown, and three first down conversions.
Yeah, I mean, he's clutch.
It's one game, and I know I'm being a hypocrite right now because I said earlier, don't just judge a guy off of one game. I saw on Twitter when this was discussion about Danny Amendola that somebody compared him to Kelly Olynyk in Game 7 against the Wizards. You know, we know that he's capable of having a game like that, but that's not what we see, you know, most of the time.
Well, see, I just feel like – I did an article about it last year. They'll bring him in on these third and longs or fourth downs when they go for it or in the red zone, and he's so productive in that role. Obviously the Super Bowl, he played better in his bigger stage and all that, but I feel that's what he is. Like, you know, he might not be on the field all the time, but when he's on there, he's productive. He's dependable. I mean, just going back to that two-point conversion, the Falcons knew that play was coming. That, like, by how it was aligned. You know, like, you could tell how it came out. They knew it was coming, and it was – they immediately went to it. It was just executed well.
Yeah.
And Amendola deserves a ton of praise for that because he hit that – I mean, he went forward as soon as he caught the ball, didn't drop it, and just got through. And I feel like that's a sort of a microcosm of the type of player he is. Like, he's very dependable, and it's hard to get a guy like that off the roster, especially with a guy like Austin Carr. We really like him, obviously. He looks really good, but he's going to be a rookie. So is he going to be somebody who at this point in his career is going to be that dependable to Tom Brady? I mean, you would like to think so, but you sort of know what you're going to get with Amendola, and it's just a question of whether or not he's dropped off or if Austin Carr really is that good.
Yeah, so with Amendola, there's three other things, really, but two football-related things. One thing is his ability to kick and punt return, right? He's probably the most reliable guy that they have that they can throw back there besides Julian Edelman, who you just don't want to see back there too often. Amendola is as reliable as it comes, and he actually adds a little bit in terms of returning it as well. You know, especially on punt returns, he's always been a good punt returner throughout his career. And he's not going to fumble. So, you know, you have that aspect. You also have the $1.5 million that they guaranteed him at signing, which is a lot of money, to then go ahead and cut him. And then the third thing, which is a little bit, you know, not look too much into this, but he did go to Montana. And he did go to Montana with Julian Edelman, and he's got Tom Brady's trust. That is definitely a given. We just talked about a bunch about the Super Bowl, and it was obvious that he had his trust then. He's not flying Danny Amendola out to Montana with Julian Edelman for a little throwing practice just to, you know, because he misses the guy.
Right.
You know, it might be a little bit because he misses the guy, but in reality, you know, I think Tom Brady wants Danny Amendola on this team. Now, I'm not going to say that Tom Brady's going to go pull a Rudy and put his jersey on Belichick's table and say, hey, you know.
And we've seen in the past guys Brady really like get cut.
Yeah.
But you're right. And I think that that trust factor is a big element. And also, you know, this team is really going all in this year. So in that respect, are they going to really take a chance with a guy like Carr when they know what they have with him?
Totally. Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, as much as I love Austin Carr, for a team that's looking to win, obviously win the Super Bowl and be, you know, a kind of one of the better teams that we've seen come through this league in general, having the fifth wide receiver be Danny Amendola instead of an undrafted rookie probably looks a little bit better going into the season if there was an injury or something like that. But, man, that receiving corps is going to be a ton of fun. I mean, I'm sure you've already seen it at practice a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, even some of the guys who are backups, like or won't be on the 53, I would say, like Devin Lucien, I've been impressed with him, you know.
He's got great hands, Devin Lucien.
Yeah, he does. And he's been so much better this year than what, like, you know, I feel like every guy who makes the jump from the first to second year, you learn so much more about the offense and you're comfortable, and, you know, he's a good player. And he's another guy where you feel like he could go off this exhibition season and the preseason, and, you know, and some team will be like, I want him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of depth all around this roster. And it's just another reason why people are so, you know, so high on this team.
I mean, let's be honest here. The players that get cut potentially from the Patriots, like, might be able to beat the Cleveland Browns. Like, I mean, that's a little bit mean, but, like, it's honestly true. Like, obviously they wouldn't beat the Browns, but they like honestly would field a pretty solid team out of the guys that are going to be on the practice squad and then the guys that end up getting cut. I mean,
yeah, the way I feel about it is when I look at how Caserio has done since he's been in the position he's in now,
worth every penny of that guy.
Yeah, he really, he's really done an excellent job of evaluating guys, and I know it's a team effort, but when it comes to that, like, if the scouting, you know, process for any NFL team is just massive, but I think you know, he's one of those guys where he's really, really valuable, and you just see it in the backup. You see it in the guys that come, you know, because everybody knows a lot of time, you know, who these first round guys are going to be, and, you know, those guys are easy to mark as a, you know, good player, but the Patriots have been picking at the back of the draft, and, you know, even not having first round picks for a while, and they really seem to hit on quite a few of these guys, and so I think he's been great. Another guy that we didn't really talk about much, but who I think is, I'm not sure is going to make the team, even though he's seeing a lot of, like, heavy reps right now, is I don't think Geno Grissom makes the team. I just feel like every time I watch him in practice, I'm like, wow, he's a great athlete, but I've never seen him really actually translate that into pass rushing skills. I've never seen him translate that into somewhere on defense where he can make plays, where he can get to the passer with a variety of moves or anything like that. And, you know, he's a good athlete. He's fine on special teams for that, but I don't see him.
Yeah, he's a big special teams contributor. I don't know, is a good name to bring up in this conversation. I mean, he's a big special teams contributor, but like you said, you see the athleticism. It makes sense why he contributes so much on special teams, but he can't contribute on defense because he's a great athlete in space and stuff like that on a football field. But when you get down to the tactical stuff, you know, it gets a little bit more difficult for him. Just quickly back on Caserio for a second. There's two guys in the Patriots building who don't have as much power or have the positions that they probably should have that I just really want the Patriots to pay and keep around for post-Belichick, and that's Nick Caserio and Josh McDaniels. Right. McDaniels probably deserves to be a head coach. Yes. Caserio probably deserves to be president of football ops and run his own team. Their time will come in New England for both guys when Belichick decides to finally hang it up. And I just hope that the Patriots keep those two, both those guys happy and well paid, so that, you know, they stick around, because Caserio will be the future of the football ops department. And I think McDaniels is the future head coach of this team if he wants it. Those are two guys that are extremely valuable. You've seen Nick Caserio try to get poached a couple different times by some other teams to come run their football operations, and he stayed put because of, you know, continuity with the Patriots and success and all those things that are all true. But he deserves to be one of the highest paid executives in the NFL, and I think that he will be someday. But yeah, Geno Grissom, another veteran on the hot seat, definitely, who I agree with. We mentioned guys like Landry and Waddle, who I just don't think is going to see get anywhere close to the roster at this point.
Yeah, especially when they drafted those two tackles. I thought that was
– yeah. We can do better than Landry and Waddle as the fourth tackle. You know, they can do better than that. So, no real sleep lost over that. But all right, Adam, we've been going a long time today, which is good.
We really brought it today.
Yeah, the first show. We were like, this is literally our very first show. Everyone that's listening, like, we talked about it possibly being a test show. And then we just, like, you know, killed it on the very first try. So that's pretty good. What do you have coming up? I know you're going to be at camp and stuff like that, which I'm jealous about.
Yeah,
so,
the next 2 days I'm at a friend's wedding, so I'm going to miss some pretty interesting stuff.
You're putting that ahead of a training camp.
I'm in the wedding, so I gotta be there, and I definitely wouldn't miss that for the world. So, but then, you know, I'll be watching a lot of camp. I'll be doing some writing, observations, and sidebars, all that stuff. So, you know, with Jeff, Karen, everybody, you know, Steve Hewitt, Carl Brooks, Meredith Foreman, you know, the whole team, I'll be trying to see, you know, how these things that we've talked about today play out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, once again, just to shout out the Boston Herald, me, Adam and I's affiliation at the moment. So shout out to them. Yeah, Jeff Howe, Karen Gurigan. How do you say her last name? You can probably say it a lot better than me.
Well, I go either Karen Gurigan or Karen Gurigan.
Yeah, we got it out there.
I'm Armenian, and we're both Armenian, so we give each other latitude on that, because there's people mispronounce my name all the time, and so like the way I go with that is just like, you can say whatever you want, I don't care. Like, yeah. It's funny, like, there's been multiple times where I've gone to like either a game or whatever, and they have, you know, Boston Herald Adam, and they misspell it. So
yeah,
you know, I'm used to it.
Yeah, no, Karen is one of the best in the business, who I don't think, like, gets enough acclaim for how good she is at her job, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that. If you don't follow her, I highly recommend reading her stuff. She's a really good writer. Adam, where can they find you, read you, all that stuff?
Just on the Herald. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Kirkton, just one word. Adam, how it sounds, and then KURKJIAN, and you know, just that I post all my stories on there. I also have a Facebook page that I'm trying to make sure I post more on, and that's just at an Adam Kirkton page. So that's where you can find me.
It's amazing how much traction stuff gets on Facebook. Like, I don't really use Facebook as much anymore now, but my parents' generation are just like all over Facebook all the time, and like whenever I post one of my Herald things on Facebook, it like does just as well, if not better, than it did on Twitter. So it's pretty amazing. But you can follow me at Easy Lazar, as always. Boston Herald stuff coming down. The UDFA piece that just got posted a couple days ago. Hopefully, have some more coming down the way in terms of stat breakdown type stuff. I'll be doing 53-man rosters, all that type of good stuff, and do some preseason breakdowns as well once the games actually start. Do some watch some film and get back into that grind. But Adam and I are really excited to speak for us both here to get this show underway.
Yeah.
We're going to be here all season through the draft too. Both Adam and I are both big film junkies, so we'll be here on the draft as well. But thanks for listening to the first show, and we'll be back next week.